Hi, this is Hugh Cornwell, and welcome to this Mr. DeMille FM podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, or simply want to get in touch, then please email info@mrdemillefm.com. This show looks at the fascinating early 1930s in Hollywood, known as the pre-code era. I hope you enjoy the show. Just under 100 years ago, a revolution took place in the movie world when sound was introduced. It had a dramatic effect on many actors' careers, and only a few managed to make the transition to sound. Some actors, whose success was due to the way they looked and acted, could be let down by a weak voice. So by the time 1930 arrived, some stars had faded and others had blossomed, but now there were huge extra costs of making films with sound and also equipping the theatres to play them. The movie business wasn't helped either by the Great Depression, which hit in 1929, so studios increased the raciness of the films they produced in order to try and win back the dwindling audiences. A code of censorship was introduced called the Hays Code, but it wasn't enforced rigorously until 1934. The American Roman Catholics launched a campaign against the immorality of American cinema in late 1933, and by the following summer, the PCA, the Production Code Administration, decided to take action. So in that brief period from 1929 to 1934, some startling films were released, and I'd like to introduce you to some of them. The things outlawed by the Hays Code were sexual innuendo, interracial romantic relations, profanity, illegal drug use, promiscuity, prostitution, infidelity, abortion, intense violence, and homosexuality. Criminals weren't allowed to be seen to profit from their deeds and suffer no repercussions, and very often female characters were portrayed as strong and too independent. Who ever heard of such a thing? Social research and government pressure suggested that immoral films could promote bad behaviour, so the studios obeyed and toned down their content in line with the code. Take a look at some of these examples. You'll be surprised at what you find. In Hot Saturday, Nancy Carroll plays a bank clerk everyone wants to date. One suitor she rejects works at her bank, and he starts a vicious rumour about her spending the night with a millionaire playboy played by Cary Grant in his first leading role. This film displays almost the full bag of tricks mentioned in the Hays Code, and its portrayal of small-town gossip and the possible fallout is masterful. Randolph Scott also stars.
Open all the windows, turn the fan on too. I'm ablaze, I'm in a daze, I'm burning for you. Call the fire engine and the whole darn crew. Tell them all to hurry, cause I'm burning for you. I try to cool off, but when you say no, I'm a volcano, what can I do? Would you let me smother?
In Red-Headed Woman from 1932, Jean Harlow runs riot as a young redhead with her sights set on her boss, played by Chester Morris, and she stops at nothing to lure him away from his wife. Harlow sizzles in this film, and it's no surprise to learn that Marilyn Monroe wanted to play her in a biopic of her life until she read the script, and then she said, "My God, I hope they don't do that to me."
Frankie and Johnny were lovers, oh Lord, how they did love. Born to be true to each other, just as true as the stars up above. He was a man, he wouldn't do her wrong. Frankie went down to the corner just for a bucket of beer. She said, "Mr. Bartender, has my lovin' Johnny been here? He is my man, he wouldn't do me wrong. I don't want to cause you no trouble, I don't want to tell you no lies, but I saw your lover half an hour ago with a girl named Nellie Bly. He is your man, but he's doing you wrong." Frankie looked over the transom, there to her great surprise, there on the couch sat Johnny, making love to Nellie Bly. He was her man, he was doing her wrong. Frankie threw back her kimono, took out a little 44. Rudy tutu, three times she shot right through that hardwood door. She shot her man, cause it done her wrong. Roll me over easy, roll me over slow. Roll me over on the left side, cause your bullets hurt me so. I was your man, and I've done you wrong. Bring out your rubber-tied horses, bring out your rubber-tied hack. I'm taking my man to the graveyard and ain't going to bring him back. He was my man, and he'd done me wrong. Bring round 1,000 policemen, bring them round today. They lock me in that dungeon cell and throw the key away. I shot my man, cause it done me wrong. Frankie, she said to the warden, "What are they going to do?" The warden, he said to Frankie, "Is the electric chair for you? You shot your man, though he'd done you wrong." The sheriff came round in the morning, said it was all for the best. He said her lover, Johnny, was nothing but a doggone pest. He was her man, but he'd done her wrong. This story has no moral, this story has no end. This story only goes to show that there ain't no good in men. He was her man, and he'd done her wrong.
Another film that year, Scarface, starred Paul Mooney. Now, this is the original the Brian De Palma film starring Al Pacino was based on. The difference is that in this one, they used real bullets for the shoot-ups. Hence, the stars really do shift to get undercover when the shooting starts. Mooney is superb as the rising gangster Tony Camonte. He appears charming and entertaining and everything that the Hays Code didn't approve of. After all, he was a criminal, not a role model. And George Raft got his first major film credit in this film. His death scene is memorable.
Thank you.
in She Had to Say Yes in 1933, Loretta Young works in the typing pool of a garment company. The boss of the company decides that the typists should date the out-of-town clients. And why not? All the male characters in this film have nothing good to show at all, and it paints a bleak picture of the standing of women at the time. Busby Berkeley, who became famous for his extravaganza musicals later, made his directorial debut on this picture. Just listen to this print ad for the film from the LA Times. She had her choice. Quit her job and stay good. Say yes and make good. What would you do if the boss gave you orders to get orders? To play overtime with away-from-home husbands who come to buy dresses and stay to chase skirts? The boot was on the other foot in Female in 1933. In this, Ruth Chatterton plays Alison Drake, the head of an automobile company who routinely beds all the good-looking men she employs in the office, with no strings attached. To show just how far ahead of its time this film was, a woman didn't run a car company until 2013. Thank you.
every kiss, every hug seems to act just like a drug. You're getting to be a habit with me. Let me stay in your arms, I'm addicted to your charms. You're getting to be a habit with me. I used to think your love was something that I could take or leave alone. But now I couldn't do without my supply. I need you for my own. Oh, I can't break away, I must have you every day. Regularly it's coffee or tea. You've got me in your clutches and I can't get free. You're getting to be a habit with me, can't break it. You're getting to be a habit with me.
Every kiss, every hug seems to act just like a drug. You're getting to be a habit with me. Let me stay in your arms, I'm addicted to your charms. You're getting to be a habit with me. I used to think your love was something that I could take or leave alone. But now I couldn't do without my supply. I need you for my own. Oh, I can't break away, I must have you every day, as regularly as coffee or tea. You've got me in your clutches and I can't get free. You're getting to be a habit with me, can't break it. You're getting to be a habit with me.
Ruth Chatterton's role had been offered to Barbara Stanwyck, who was the star of Babyface in 1933. In this film, Stanwyck plays Lily Powers, a girl who, after being continually exploited by men, decides to sleep her way up the corporate ladder. It was banned from several US cities upon release, even though it had been cut beforehand. Barbara Stanwyck is great in this role. I read a review that said, pre-code films were more blatant sexually and therefore appear to be more modern. How true that is. A 25-year-old John Wayne appears as one of Lily's conquests on the ladder.
Your pretty baby face.
Warren William could fairly be called the king of the pre-code era. He had a rich, deep voice, just made for talking pictures, and he soon came to prominence. He pigeonholed the role of the predatory cad of wealthy means, but was forgotten after the Hays Code was enforced, as these roles were no longer being written. Several of his films are standout classics from this era. Employee's Entrance, in which he ruthlessly manages a skyscraper department store and pursues Loretta Young until she gives in to him.
April shower, it was the most convenient door. I found $1 million baby in a 5 and 10 cent store. The rain continued for an hour, I hung around for 3 or 4. I found $1 million baby in a 5 and 10 cent store. She was selling china, and when she made those eyes, I kept buying china until the crowd got wide. Babe, incidentally, if you should run into a shower, just step inside my cottage door and meet the $1 million baby from the 5 and 10 cent store.
In Skyscraper Souls, he's also the owner of a skyscraper. This time he's after the delightful Maureen O'Sullivan, fresh from her success as Jane in Tarzan the Ape Man. Warren William could be sly, mean and funny, and his voice had such gravitas that he always carried any scene he was in. Don't forget, Prohibition was still in force until 1933, and the public lapped up the lavish parties his characters almost always threw.
I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with your rain, I've got a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain. Why am I smiling? Why do I sing?
Why does December seem sunny as spring? Why do I get up each morning to start happy and head up with joy in my heart? Why is each new task a trifle to do? Because I am living a life full of you. Just singing in the rain, what a glorious feeling, I'm happy again. I'm laughing at clouds so dark up above. The sun's in my heart and I'm ready for love. Let the stormy clouds chase everyone from the place. Come on with your rain, I've got a smile on my face. I'll walk down the lane with a happy refrain, just singing, singing in the rain.
The fascinating Svengali in 1931 is a real treat. The great John Barrymore stars as the music teacher who hypnotises a young girl, Trilby, played by a teenage Marion Marsh, and makes her into a singing sensation. The sets are remarkable, designed by Anton Grott, and resembling those in early German Expressionism, earning an Oscar nomination. There's a remarkable tracking shot from Svengali's face right across Paris, the rues of Paris, into the bedroom of Trilby, who is forced to go to him in the middle of the night. Archie Mayo directed, and the film was a great success. Trilby is an artist's model, and Marion Marsh wore a body stocking when she is posing nude at an artist's studio. The pairing of Barrymore and Marsh were to repeat the formula in The Mad Genius the same year, directed by Michael Curtis.
And trembled with fear and
Gene Harlow teamed up with Clark Gable in six films in the decade, and three of them were in the pre-code time. In Red Dust, Gable runs a rubber plantation and his head is turned by first Gene Harlow as Vantine, a prostitute on the run from Saigon, and then by Mary Astor as the wife of one of his employees. Harlow really earns her money in this one, and there's a famous rain barrel bath scene. At one stage, she reputedly stood up topless, saying, "Here's one for the boys." And one reviewer described the pairing of Gable and Harlow as spreading hormones all over the screen. Gable and Harlow made a more interesting film the following year called Hold Your Man. This is a much more gritty, hard-boiled film about losers and grifters. It starts out being Gable's film but ends up being Harlow's. The great Anita Loos and Emmett Rogers provided the script for this, and it really shows.
That will rosy eyes drift to paradise. Give him love and you'll hold your man.
It's a fascinating film. On the one hand, it celebrates the lawlessness of pre-code values, whilst on the other, it begins to herald in the law and order and moralising that the code brought the next year. But it found an audience and made a huge profit. I'd like to leave you with the king of pre-code, Warren William. In The Mouthpiece, he plays a prosecutor who sees an innocent man go to the electric chair and he's disillusioned. So he changes sides and becomes a defence attorney for criminals. This is an outstanding pre-code movie. It was his breakthrough role. He never looked back. Please join me for more pre-code classics down the line.
Just a slave to music, all time to sow his oats. Can't help but cheer when Goofy Gear plays piano as he does by ear. They make a fuss over him, does he make dough? Oh, then it's no wonder he's so temperamental. He needs a longer keyboard, they'll build him one, no fear. You should hear young Goofy Gear, he plays piano and he plays by ear. Plays Lisbeth, Bach, and Beethoven, too. Right in the middle of his Bach, he'll switch to the Rhapsody in Blue. Then for a little bit of Rachmaninoff, that's your cue to say, hey, lay off that highbrow, we'll have no more, no sir. And just watch Goofy show how can go lowbrow. Brown.